Now, if you're like me, I'm kind of impatient, and perhaps you're saying, boy, I'd like to kind of really get to it a little bit quicker than I am, or perhaps you're saying, oh, you're going too fast. We don't really know, but here's what we do know. We know how to put a foundation underneath of you, and I really insisted that you get the basics under your belt before we went on in the program and took you to where you really want to go and where you really need to be. And here's the reason why. We want, when you coach, when you speak, when you help people come alongside and add value to their lives, we want you to have the basics inside of you. You cannot give what you do not have. And so what we're doing now is we're depositing in you. We're putting what we need to in your life so that you can turn around and put what you need to in the lives of others. And so therefore, we're committed to you in this journey, and if you'll just be patient with us and let us take you through the process that I have used for many, many years in developing and training leaders, coaches, and speakers, then I can tell you on the back end, you'll be so glad that you've got this foundation under your feet and you've got the basics inside of you, because then you're not only going to be secure in what you're doing, you're going to be very confident in helping people really get to where they need to go. So we're doing it together. I'm excited. I'm really wanting to make sure that you have the laws of leadership in your life, because they are so basic to everything that you're going to do as a coach and as a speaker and as a leader. So let's go on. Let's get going. I want to give to you law number 10, the law of connection. And the law of connection basically says that the great leaders, they touch a heart before they ask for a hand. And this is a tremendous leadership law. It's a relationship law. It's all about the fact that before you ask people to move from one place to another as a leader, you want to minister to and speak to into their heart. You've got to connect with them emotionally before you can move them physically. I've made this statement many times that people won't go along with you until they can get along with you. And too often, leaders who are visionary and know where they're going and are very definite in how to get where they are become so committed to that process that they forget that you've got to, first of all, connect with the person that you're trying to lead. I've said before that relationships is the foundation of successful leadership. I find that to be true, especially if you're going to be in a mentoring role with somebody for a long period of time. You see, if I'm just going to speak one time to you and you're in the audience and then I'm going to go to another city, I don't really have to probably do a lot of relationship stuff with you. I just go out and kind of give a good speech and hopefully you'll like it and then I'm on my way. But that's not what this is all about. We're trying to help you to help others to grow on a daily basis. And that means we have to connect with people. We have to relate with people. In fact, I'm so committed to connection that I wrote a book, Everyone Communicates, Few Connect. And basically the book says we want to help you know how to connect with others. And I'm so excited because once you learn how to connect with the heart, once you begin to be able to emotionally connect with people, it is amazing how you can help them. And remember, the reason that we're connecting with people is because we're wanting to help them. One of the things I want to say about this law, because it's such a tremendous law that I've literally found to be true in my life and be effective for many, many years, is that what this means is that I, as the leader, always take the effort to connect with the follower, with the client. You see, many leaders, they basically say, here I am, come up to the mountain, join me, follow me on this great ride that I'm going to take you on. And they fail to go to where the people are, to walk slowly through the crowd, to listen, to have kind of a heart to care, and to really kind of discover what that person is all about. One of the great differences between leaders and managers is that managers treat everyone the same. They basically want to manage people, and they basically have a system, the way to do it, and they want everybody to kind of get in the right spot and get in the right line, and they want to process them through. But they basically treat everyone the same, whereas leaders, the great coaches, they treat everyone differently because they realize that people are differently motivated. They realize that people have different dreams and different desires in their life. And so what they do is they know before they can lead them successfully, they've got to ask questions. They've got to know about this person's life. They've got to inquire about their journey. They've got to know them intimately if they're to move them outwardly. I can think of my own inner circle, the people that are closest to me. I can tell you almost every one of them has a different motivation button or a motivation desire or a different dream than the others. And I can't look at all of them and say, okay, I'm going to all treat you the very same. No, I need to know them, and then I need to lead them according to their desires, their heart. And this only comes by connection. I have come to the conclusion that the reason most leaders don't connect with others is because it's easier to try to get people to connect with them. And so, therefore, they're always sure to make sure they know what their vision, their wishes, their desires are. But I've also watched that type of a leader fail miserably. Because people will not, for a long time, go on a journey just to serve you and your desires and fulfill your ambition and your vision. They have their own dreams. They have their own journey they want to take. So as a leader, I want to encourage you, as you learn to coach, as you learn to speak, the first item on your agenda always is not where am I taking them or what am I wanting to know or what am I wanting them to do. Your first item is where are they now? How can I find them? How can I learn from them? How can I listen to them? How can I connect with them? Because the moment that you connect, that's the moment that you begin to move them in the right direction.
Okay, so after hearing that, a couple of things I want to just kind of be mindful of. The first one is this law of connection is a very interesting law, I think different from others, because honestly, it requires that you really care. And I know that sounds really simple, maybe even embarrassing, you know, to kind of state, assuming that you are in leadership or you're the manager, or you're the director, or you're getting ready to start, you know, an organization and you lead a ministry. But unfortunately, this is probably the law that helps you determine where you really are. It's that self-evaluation because, you know, we can talk connect, we can teach connect, we're getting ready to go through this worksheet, and so, you know, we're filling these blanks, and so you'll have on paper what connection is. But the real heart of connection, you know, when he talks about leaders touch a heart before they ask for a hand, it's really been at a place where you really genuinely care about people. We live in a day and age now where there's so much information available that what it does is it really helps people without any super spiritual gift. It really helps them discern whether you really care about them or you are asking questions, inquiring about them for your own benefit. And so I think the law of connection, you know, when he talks about touching a heart before you ask for a hand, really is about being authentic and caring for people, and then you're able to connect. So, you know, we'll go through the sheet, you find some ways to do that. We talk about the heart comes first. You must connect on an emotional level. Again, that's why I really believe that it's something that you have to really care about and be authentic about. And then the question, of course, is how do we live out this law? The first thing we do is you must connect with yourself. It's the age-old idea that before you can love anybody else, you have to love yourself. And it's the same idea for business. It's the same idea for any level of leadership, that before you can pull anything out of anyone else, before you can motivate anyone else to do something, you have to believe in yourself. You have to know what your skills are. You have to know what you are capable of. You have to believe that you are able to lead people. Otherwise, it just won't happen. So you got to be able to connect with yourself. And a couple of ways he talks about it, particularly from this book written by Kevin Hall. He's the author of a book called Aspire. He does these four belief systems for connecting with yourself. One, he says, I am worthy, which means you actually are entitled to it. You have I am capable, which means you actually have the ability to do it. I am deserving. The deserving is really important because there are often moments where you may not have had the credential or you may have made mistakes or you may not necessarily be qualified for the assignment or the position. You know, outside of your degrees and outside of, you know, a favor done by a friend, you just don't really feel deserving or there's some past guilt that you may carry. You got to get over that. If you're in place, if you are the leader, if you've given an assignment, at some place you got to get back to, you know, I do deserve this. Not I deserve it because I'm great, because I'm perfect, but I deserve it because I'm here. And I am deserving is a really important step. And then the last one that Kevin Hall talks about is I trust myself. You won't ever trust other people if you can't trust you. If you doubt you, if you don't think you can do it, then you won't think others can. And so, again, you want to be able to connect with yourself in order to connect with others. You have to be able to touch a heart before you can ask for a hand. Again, that's the common theme for being able to connect. And the first heart that you have to touch, as we mentioned already, is your own heart. You have to know you better than other people know you. Now, again, we talked about the Johari window, and if you haven't had any teaching or have never looked at the Johari window, please take a look at that. Johari is a guy who paints these four blocks, and what he does in these four blocks, he says there are always areas of your life that people know that you don't know. So there are going to be some things that people label you as. There are going to be some attributes that you have that others identify that you may miss. But there ought to be some things you know about you that others don't know that you can kind of pull from, because it would then cause you to look at areas in them that they don't know about so that they can be drawn, that it can be drawn out from them. So you have to have a heart before you touch a hand. You have to have some adequate idea of your own heart and what you're able to do. You cannot lead others to places that you've never been to yourself. Again, you cannot lead others to places that you've never been to yourself. So here's what that means. It's not necessarily meaning that you have to have the education or you've actually had to finish the project. Because, again, you know, you're a visionary. You are a leader. We're asking you to do things that have not been done before. So we're not necessarily saying that you have to have already accomplished a task to get people there. But what we are saying is in order to connect with other people, you have to have really connected with yourself, been honest with yourself about your victories, your success, your setbacks, be honest about, you know, what people hurt you, what people have helped you. You have to be honest about experiences, because when you have that type of evaluation for yourself, then it allows you to take others to places that they may be trying to avoid. You know, in church, we just call it give your testimony. If you're willing to share where you've been and what you've been through, then what it does, it frees other people up to, one, be able to share about theirs, but it also helps them to overcome some things that they don't have to fall in because you're honest about where you've been. Same thing in leadership, same thing with business, same thing in your organization. You have to be willing to let your employers know, let your employees know, or let your coworkers know, look, here's something I've already experienced, and I'm okay telling you that because I'm confident in me. Which brings us to, you know, this next portion where it talks about knowing your giftedness. When we talk about knowing your giftedness, it's really saying know your purpose. Purpose is God-given DNA. And the way you do that is you list your greatest successes. Like what things have you been good at from elementary school, middle school, college, at the last job, in a relationship, at your church, in a ministry. You know, all of those certificates that you gained that, you know, other people laughed at because it was a certificate and maybe not a degree. You go back and look at it and think about the work you actually put in to gain those or to earn those. And those type of things really kind of help you identify what you're gifted in, what your purpose is. Likewise, you know, list your disappointments or setbacks. If you remember a few lessons back, we talked about putting a list of what you're going to stop doing in order to get better at what you are going to do. Same thing with purpose. If you can come up with a list of things that you did not do well, no matter how hard you tried, then what it does is it allows you to begin to create an elimination system for things that are not your purpose. The more things you discover that are not your purpose, the better you walk in the direction of things that are your purpose. So, again, know your giftedness. You want to know your enthusiasm, right? Know what you're passionate about. And it should go without saying that whatever you're passionate about, you're doing it. Unfortunately, many people don't get to work their 9-to-5 in something that they're passionate in. Maybe you do, and if so, that is a blessing. And you ought to thank God for that and appreciate that often. But oftentimes, we're in a place where we have to put time, energy, and resource into something that is not a passion. So our passions kind of slip away. Our dreams are deferred. Aspirations are often cast to the side. Goals that you started out going after, somehow they start to vanish because you work every day or you deal with people every day or you now have a family and you're trying to balance the family with what you were passionate about. And family takes priority, so you lose passion. Somehow, in order for you to connect with people, you have to remember what you're passionate about. It's very difficult for a leader to pull passion out of someone else when they don't have their own self-motivated passion. Look, the passions don't have to be in the same area. You don't have to be passionate about the same thing, but the fact that you are enthusiastic and excited about what you're doing and what lane you're in will cause you to want to be excited about someone else. I wish you could visualize it the way I see it. A person can be excited about where they're going and what they want to do, a plan they have, or some new innovative idea that's going to boost your company, organization, your ministry. But because you are frustrated that you aren't walking and living in, carrying out your passion, you won't ever grab for them. You won't ever pull from them their passion, because deep down you're bitter that you're not living out yours. Look, if we're going to connect with people, we have to be willing to really fuel our personal passion. Because if you fuel your personal passion, you will immediately attract other people and pull their passion out. That's the law of magnetism we talked about a couple of lessons back. So know your enthusiasm. What are the things you do or would do if no one ever paid you? You didn't get a check, you didn't have a salary. If you could just bankroll 5 or 10 years and say, this is what I'm going to do for the next 5 or 10 years, what is that? There lies, you know, your passion. What makes you laugh? You know, what makes you sing? What makes you cry? Again, they're old quotes and cliches, but some things make you dance in the rain, laugh when nobody else is laughing with you. Those are the things that may be unique about you, but what they do is they help us establish what our passion is. You got to learn to live through your giftedness and enthusiasm. When we talk about living through it, we talk about now developing a plan. Won't highlight this too much because we've already really talked about process. We talked about planning before. But the plan is the executed combination of purpose and passion. The plan is an executed combination of purpose and passion. Matter of fact, it's often been said that true success is your ability to live your purpose with your passion through a plan. So you figure out what it is you're supposed to do and then connect that with something you like doing. And then you come up with a plan for how you're going to do what you like, and that's where you find success. And, you know, as quiet as it's kept, I think a lot of people who put that equation together to find success somehow make it lucrative, where it is able to finance, you know, their home, purchase new business equipment. Somehow they're able to turn that around. You know, we'll talk about that in later masterminds, how to turn your passion and your purpose into pennies that pay, you know, what we call it. But there is a way to take what you already like and make money off of it. It may not start off as your main source of income, but it can definitely start off as a secondary, which then grows over time. So you want to understand that true success really is the ability to take your purpose and your passion and then come up with a plan for it. When we talk about connecting, the second thing you got to remember for true leadership is communicate with openness and sincerity. You have to keep those lines open. Communicate with openness and sincerity. That is, again, why I really believe that this law is essential, because it helps you really figure out, do you care about people? You have to choose candor and caring as tools to keep you balanced. Authenticity is a trait people are looking for. Like, they want you to be honest. They want you to be sincere. When we talk about communicate with openness and sincerity, what we're talking about is before the meeting or before you start your work day, you actually ask someone how their family's doing and really care. You know that your coworker has a daughter who just graduated and received a scholarship to the best university in the country, James Madison University, just for the record. I mean, you know that, right? You know already that your coworker's husband was in the hospital. You know that someone lost a loved one. You know their birthday is coming up. Those are the things that really help you connect. And again, if in fact leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less, and that's been our definition of leadership since day one, then you're able to better influence people that you're connected with because they really believe you care. Now, they don't know you care just because it's in your mind. You have to communicate that. You have to say it. You have to be the one to literally, not just send an email, while emails are great, you have to be the one to write a handwritten card, place it on a coworker's desk, put it in an employee's hand and say, I just wanted you to know I was thinking about you. We lose that. And I think email is great. You know, I'm a techie by heart. Many of you know that already. I think the text message is quick. But one of the things that I rediscovered, particularly going through the John Maxwell program, is there's some things that don't change. And personalizing something with your handwriting, you taking the time out to actually write the letter, write their name, it speaks volumes. Now, again, you got to care enough to do that. I think the email works. I think the text is good because they're both quick. What they don't do is they don't make me think that you spend a lot of time caring for me. But you get the card. Get maybe, you know, some dollar store pre-printed cards. And when people have special moments, pull those cards out. Take 1, 2, 3 minutes out of your day and communicate with openness and sincerity that I really do care about you. And watch your influence grow. Because now they aren't following their boss. They're not following their ministry leader. They're not following their manager. They're not following their employer. They're following what they really believe is a friend, what they really believe is, you know, a true associate that understands me and cares about me. So then when you have these extreme demands or you give them a really ambitious goal to meet by the end of the week, they work hard at it because they aren't just working for the money or for the company. They're actually working for their leader. Got to communicate it. So don't just think about it. But the third thing you have to do is know your audience. Almost like the magnetism law, you want to, you know, be careful that you don't just have blanket statements. You have to know who you're talking to. I'll say this, one of the things that I transitioned to just in my personal preaching is growing up, you know, I always heard it, and when I started preaching, I tossed it out there. But I would say things, and even so often now, I have to kind of catch myself, I'll say things like, you know, God is a healer. It doesn't matter what the doctor says. God is a healer. And I would say that. Doesn't matter what the doctor does. Don't worry about the doctor. Doctor don't know anything. God is the doctor. I would keep saying that until I actually had to minister to one of the doctors in our congregation. She had illness in her family. And I spent time with her, you know, helping her process it, which was difficult because obviously as a doctor, she already knows some things, so I'm trying to break her from what she knows. And I'm ministering to the doctor only to realize that every time I spoke out of my mouth and said, it doesn't matter what the doctor said, I was discrediting her vocation. I was belittling her education. I made her feel as if she wasn't important. Now, she never said that. She never said it. But it clicked when I was getting ready to tell her, it doesn't matter what the doctor says, and I was talking to a doctor. I disconnected from her the entire time I was pastoring or allegedly leading the congregation because I failed to acknowledge or know my audience. Now I know. And so that phrase changes drastically. I won't ever say again as I'm preaching, don't worry about what the doctor says. I'll say things like consider what the doctor says, but then still know what God will do. And so, again, that's just, you know, a personal example for me on how knowing your audience changes your connection. Number four. You want to live your message. It goes without saying that actions speak louder than words, and so people will watch you much more than they'll listen to you. Number five, go to where they are. So, again, when we talk about going to where they are, yes, that's a physical thing. For many of you, I know your office is a sacred place, and so all of the meetings happen there. But every so often you can go to their cubicle, you can go to where they are, you can literally go to where they may be meeting. I know there's the manager's room, and then there's the regular employee's room. You got the nice coffee maker. You know, they just have the water. But you can go there. So physically you want to go there. But even more importantly than physically going, you want to be able to emotionally connect with people. You really don't know what people go through in a day. You know, the person who has road rage and they cut you off, you can get upset. Or you can think, you know what, maybe they're having a rough day, or maybe they're rushing to a hospital, or maybe they're going to pick up a child who is sick. I don't know. But the idea in connecting is before you assume that how you feel about it is right, you both mentally and emotionally try to figure out where they are. The coworker who just lost a loved one, you know, it may take them a few days, or a week or so, maybe even a month, before they get back to being as productive as they were. Now, you can let them go because they aren't producing for your company, your business, your organization, or if you're really going to connect, you can go to where they are emotionally. How would you bounce back from work if a parent passed away or a sibling passed away or niece or nephew passed away? Sometimes we want to get through the process so quickly and so bad that we disregard people. And one of the rules of thumb that I've lived by is people are always more important than the problem, no matter what. I had a seminary professor, Harry Simmons, who teaches pastoral care. And one of the things he taught us is people are always more important than the problem. And whenever you start emphasizing fixing the problem and eliminating people, what Maxwell would allude to is that you begin to disconnect. And if you disconnect, you no longer have influence. If you don't have influence, you are not leading. So make sure you're able to go to where they are. Six, focus on them, not you. Every conversation you have should not end up with what you want or how you feel or how it was like something you did. There are great moments where you should allow intentionally the conversation to be 100% about them, about their weekend, about their idea, about their plans, about their children, about their family. Figure out how to make it about them, even if they're trying to make it about you. Seven, you got to believe in them. This again, is, I think, a challenge, because you will discover that people don't always have the same skill set you do. And even if they don't have the same skill set you do, they may have a different method at coming to the same result. And a lot of times what will happen is you'll have someone doing something, acting, carrying out an assignment, and they'll finish it, and then you'll go right back behind them and do it all over again, because although it was done, it wasn't done the way you wanted it. That is the most demeaning and disconnecting act a leader can commit. I know you're thinking, but because you're the leader, because you're the manager, because that's your department, you're going to be fully responsible for what happens at the end. And you're right. But you want to make sure that you let those who you're working with know that you believe in them enough that what they do, while it may be different than what you would have done, is still valuable. Otherwise, they'll never give 100% because they already know that whatever they do, you can come right back behind them and do it all over again. They already know. They'll do 50% and it'll look as if it's incomplete because they already expect you to come behind them and do it. Let's be honest, if you can come behind them and do it, you don't need them anyway. And while we want to make it their fault, in leadership training, I've got to submit that that's usually our fault as leaders. We don't believe in them enough. We don't trust them enough. We don't allow them to be stewards over what's important to us. Here's what you're going to discover. The more you believe in them, the more you show them that I believe in you, the more responsibility you actually allow them to have, the more they'll grow to do it, maybe like you, or they'll help you grow by showing you that there are multiple ways to get done the same assignments. But if you're going to connect, you want to believe in them. Eight, you want to offer direction and hope. In other words, you want to point them in both the direction, you want to give them the assistance, but you don't want to do it for them. You want to let them know that it can be done, that it is possible, that you are capable of accomplishing this, but you don't want to always do it for them. The more you do for them, while it may feel like connecting, the less you need each other. What you do when you carry out their assignments, when you do all of the work and just ask them to come along, is it always keeps them dependent on you. At some point, you want them, you want your employees, you want the people that are ministering in your ministry, you want those who you're working alongside to feel valuable enough where you let it go and you create something in them where they're hoping, they're believing, and more importantly, they're going after it because they think you depend on them. Now, the only way they're going to think you depend on them is if you create some level of hope in them. You instill some level of higher expectation in them. Again, you want to connect with them. And one of the ways you connect with them is you let your vision, your ideas become their vision and their ideas. And that happens when you give them direction instead of just doing it for them. When we offer sincere and genuine hope, what it does, it touches their hearts. And whenever we touch a heart, that's when we actually connect. Couple things as we kind of end up this law 10. You have to know how to lead others to the law whenever you hear it. So here are three phrases that you may hear, and if you hear these three phrases, it suggests that you really want to start trying to reconnect with people. One phrase is, I like my people, but I just don't feel like we're on the same page. Everybody's nice, but you just don't feel like it's going the right way. If you're hearing that phrase, there's a chance that you aren't connecting. I have a few people that are as competent as the rest, but we are always butting heads. Again, it's possible for everybody to be getting their work done and not like each other because there has been no connection. Well, every time I talk to Mr. and Mrs. Jones, I get this glazed over look from them, as if they just don't understand. If that's taking place, probably an indication that you haven't been connected. That for tonight is Law 10. And as mentioned, I didn't want to just pause for a moment and ask if anyone had any questions, particularly any questions. Questions are great. I think we learn a lot from questions. If you do have a question, I'm going to ask if you hit *6. *6 will unmute your phone. And after you unmute it, then go ahead and ask your question. Anybody have any questions about Law 10? If you're talking and still muted, we need you to hit *6. Okay. I don't see that there are any questions, so what we'll do is we'll go ahead and move to Law 11. And Law 11 is the law of the inner circle. I'd like to go ahead and give a John Maxwell teaching. It's about a four-minute clip, and then we'll talk about it as it relates to the actual worksheet you have.
Law number 11 is the law of the inner circle, which basically says a leader's potential is determined by those that are closest to him or closest to her. Now, this is a very important law. I learned it at the age of 40. I was going through kind of a midlife summary of where I was and how far I was advancing in my career. And to be honest with you, I spent a couple days in reflection, and I became a little discouraged because I had not yet achieved what I wanted to achieve. And I kind of pulled back, and I thought, John, what's the problem? I came to the conclusion after a couple of days that I had not spent enough time on what I call my inner circle, my most valuable team members, that I hadn't really spent enough time developing them, equipping them, training them, really making sure that my values and their values were the same, that we were on the same track vision-wise. And I made a determination, which truthfully has become the best business decision I ever made in my life. At the age of 40, I determined that I would spend more time, more energy, more effort, more money in investing in those who were the closest to me than at any other effort that I would make in business from that time on. And I found that to be very true, that now that I'm in my 60s, I'm looking back and I'm saying that was a huge decision. Because now that inner circle, that inner core, those few very valuable people around me, those closest to me, have truly multiplied the success of my life in an immeasurable way until I can tell you that I'm now on the receiving end and I'm receiving more than I ever gave to them. But that investment in them to make sure that they and I were on the same wavelength and had the same heartbeat was absolutely essential. And I really want that for you because you have an inner circle. And you have people that are going to either make you or break you. They're going to be the wind beneath your wings or the anchor on your boat. They're going to lift you higher, or to be honest with you, they're going to bring you down. I've often said that all of your inner circle members, they literally walk around with two buckets in their hands. One of the buckets has gasoline in it, and the other bucket has water in it. And every time in your organization there's a spark of fire, a contention, a problem that breaks out, and that little fire starts, they either take that bucket of water and go over there and throw it on the fire and kind of just take care of the problem, and it just becomes a wisp of smoke in a minute. Or else they take that bucket of gasoline and that little fire that started, by the time they do that bucket of gasoline on there, you've got a real problem. And I find that that's very true with people. Those are closest to you. They could either make a problem kind of go away for you, or they can take a problem when they get done, you really have a problem. And so I want to really encourage you as you build your business, And as you really work on being a better mentor and a coach or a speaker and bring those people around you that are really essential to your success and you're essential to their success and they're your inner circle or they're your best clients, what I want to encourage you to do is to invest in them. Make sure that you have the same values, that you have the same vision. Spare no expense of time, effort, energy, or money to make sure that you really help them, because here's what's beautiful. When you help them, they are the closest to help you. And I think sometimes the temptation for us is to is to think, well, they're already on the team and they're already close to me, and so therefore I don't need to spend much time with them. I got to go spend a bunch of time with people that aren't that close to me, not realizing that you invest in your people based upon the proximity they are to you. And the closer they are to you, the more you invest in them, because that's where the high return is. Here's what I know about the law of the inner circle. For the last 20-plus years, I have discovered that my greatest friendships are those people that are in my inner circle. My greatest memories are with those people that are in my inner circle. My greatest accomplishments are with those people that are within my inner circle. And 90% of all the good stuff that's happened to my life and business has become because of those people that were the closest to me. And I want that for you. I want that for you. So spend a lot of time investing in yourself, but spend a lot of time investing in those key people around you, because that is money and effort that will compound and return greatly to you. The law of the inner circle basically says to you and me, spend your time with those that are closest to you, and the return will be great.
So just to kind of summarize, you know, what we get on this particular law, obviously, that the law of the inner circle is helping you understand that your potential is always determined by those closest to you. Now, keeping in context, we're not necessarily talking about your friendships. While I do personally suggest, and if this were discipleship or a ministry moment, I would say this law is true for your friendships, that you will rarely go higher than the closest friends you have. You will probably won't do more than what the people around you are doing, because, as Grandma put it, birds of a feather flock together. That's just, you know, old school good information for friendships. What we're talking about when we talk about the law of the inner circle, we're really talking about for your businesses, for your professional career, in your organizations, maybe in your ministry. And while you may have friends in all of those circles, what we're really trying to identify are the people that help grow your business, the people that in law 10 you were able to connect with, and you saw that, you know, against all odds, they would still be there. So when we go through these principles of how to actually live out the law of the inner circle, again, we're not talking necessarily about your best friend or, you know, your girlfriend or your boyfriend that you grew up with from, you know, what, jelly shoes and jump rope. Not that friend. We're talking about business partners that you are intentional about. And let me say this also before we kind of get into the meat of it. It is positive and it's okay for you to look for and recruit people because you think they'll be beneficial to your business or to your organization. That's okay. I think it's often been said that you don't want to look like you're trying to use people. But understand, you won't be using them. You'll be partnering where sometimes they'll be beneficial to you, other times you'll be beneficial to them. But together, you know, it creates a win-win. And so, you know, don't ever feel as though that you are being manipulative. Remember, leadership is influence. And so part of what you're doing is influencing them to be a part of what you're doing. So with that in mind, as we kind of go through our worksheet, the law of the inner circle puts us in this place where no one ever does anything greater alone. There's no big assignment that you're going to be able to accomplish by yourself. You're going to need someone, and since you're going to need someone, you want to be really intentional about the inner circle. Here's how you create the inner circle. There are these five guidelines. The first one is asking yourself, do they have high influence with others? Do they have high influence with others? So what you're really saying is, I'm a leader, and I have to be a leader for my business, organization, ministry to be successful. The question now I'm asking is, are they a leader? Because what you don't want is to recruit only followers. Remember, good leaders produce good leaders. So if you partner with followers, then your followers aren't going to be able to produce leaders, and it's going to put you at a place where you're still carrying all the weight. But if you are intentional about partnering with other leaders, then they help balance your weight, where together you all are able to grow your business, grow your organization. The second thing you want to look at when we talk about finding those and growing those who are in your inner circle is, do they bring a complimentary gift to the table? Key term there is complimentary gift. It's not the same gift. Again, we kind of talked about this a few laws back, and that is, you want to surround yourself with people who are strong in your weaknesses. So do they have a gift that helps complement yours? If you are a dreamer, if you always come up with great vision, you probably need somebody who does the details and the logistics. Because chances are you always have these big ideas, and then you get them started, and you leave out things. You had 1,000 people come to your event, but didn't have a registration table. You were collecting all of this money, but didn't have a lockbox. Those are small details that matter to the success of your business and organization that you may not recognize if you don't have other people who have complementary gifts. The third thing is, do they hold a strategic position in your organization? So this is a couple of things. One, it is, do they already have a position that is a key position, or if bringing them in, is your plan to put them in a key position, or are they going to be in a place where their partnership and their leadership skill won't be useful? For some of you, you should probably be thinking right now about some people that you're already working with and asking yourself, are they in a key position? Like, are they in a place where they can really make change, or are they in a place where they have to submit to someone else before they can even get an idea through? Because chances are they can't be in your inner circle or help you lead if they're three generations or three stages or three levels away, because their influence has no impact. So you want to ask that. And then maybe you're hiring people. And if you're hiring someone or bringing somebody on board, you want to ask yourself, you know, what position can I put them in? And sometimes it'll be creating a position. It'll be making up a name or giving it a title so that they actually have some equal stake in what's going to be going forward as your vision or ministry or dream. The fourth thing you want to ask is, do they add value to you and to your organization? A little different from complementary gift, because the complementary gift is actually looking for a skill. But talk about adding value. The real question is, do they make us better? There are times where people can be a part of what you have going on, and they're not messing it up. It's not getting worse. The question you have to ask is it getting better? The question you don't ask is, you know, are they hurting? Are people running away? Are people leaving? Are our finances going down since they're here? Because it's possible for them to jump on board and assimilate or merge into your current structure and do very well. But when we talk about the inner circle, we're talking about the person that comes on board and things get better. Finances go up. Your numbers grow. Productivity increases. And that happens not just because of what you're doing, but you got to be honest and say, you know what, that wouldn't happen if you weren't here. I have a few examples of that. We have a secretary who works very well and very diligently, and she does her best at what she can do. We had another young lady who came in, you know, she had just been unemployed, and she just began to volunteer. And in 2 weeks of volunteering, she reshifted the organization of our entire church in office and in ministry. And I say that to say what she did is she came on board and proved that she added value. She didn't just jump on the board. Didn't just ride the train. She sped the train up. And that's what you want to find out. Do they actually add value to where you are? The fifth thing you want to ask is, do they positively impact other inner circle members? Key there is other inner circle members. You don't always have to, and it may sound a little bad, but we're talking to leaders, so take it, you know, for what it is. You don't always have to figure out if they work well with everybody in the organization. You want to figure out, do they work well with the other people who are influencing and leading your organization? Because they may not get along well with everybody, but if they get along well with the inner circle components, then together you all can move your organization forward. So those are just five things you want to look at when we talk about developing the inner circle. The next thing is you want to make sure that you're recruiting, like you're actually looking for them. And so the idea we always talk about, and you'll hear it again throughout the CMI training, is you got to be able to recruit eagles. Eagles recruit eagles. You go look for them. It's a whole lot of birds out there, but if you're going to find a bird, find the best one. And the way you do that is you identify a few traits. You identify these three traits particularly. One, you want to check on their competence. Do they know anything about what you guys are doing? Do they know anything about your organization or your field? Two, you want to check their character, because they can know a whole lot, but if they can't be trusted, then they can't represent you. And then you want to check their chemistry. Do they click? Do they connect? Do they have that law 10 down where they're actually able to merge and blend in with you and other Inner Circle members. Okay? One of the things you want to be mindful of is once you get that Inner Circle, never stop improving it. Never stop improving your Inner Circle. If you go to a conference, they should go to a conference. If you learn something, they should learn it. If there's a conference you hear about that highlights whatever their skill is, you should be sending them. A lot of times we spend energy and resource trying to bring our bottom up instead of trying to lift our top layer higher. Remember, the very first lesson we talked about was the law of the lid, and that is you will never go as high as your lid is, and you do not raise your lid by lifting your bottom. Now, if you lift your bottom to your lid, all you did was smash your organization. If you really want to lift your organization higher and move it further, you want to take those who are already at the top higher than they are, make them better than they've ever been, give them more than what they can handle. What we say is we under-promise and over-deliver, and you do it with that top tier so that they gain so much that your lid is raised on your entire organization. And what that does is that allows everyone around you to experience some growth. That's actually that next blank. Everyone around you needs to be on a journey of growth. And so if they ever get stagnant, then they become a liability. You want to make sure that they're always growing. If you have an Inner Circle member who is not improving, and when we talk about not improving, we're saying they're not improving for the sake of you or your Inner Circle or your entire team, you know it's time to make a change. This is that place where you look at some of the people who've been around all the time, and unfortunately they want to stay because they've always been there, they have tenure, and you want to keep them because they've always been there and they had tenure. But realistically, anything that's not growing will eventually die, and anything that's dead will kill things that are alive. Usually live plants don't bring dead plants to life, but dead plants will kill the live plants every time. With that in mind, you want to be mindful as a leader that there are moments you're going to have to be able to let people go or transition them. The second thing you want to do is be prepared to be an Inner Circle member for someone else. So while you have your organization going well, don't be afraid to partner with someone else, some other organization. You know, even with the CMI network we've been building, you know, connect with somebody else that's on these calls so that you too can become that Inner Circle member for another organization. Again, you don't have to be in charge. You don't have to be the leader's leader, but you want to be in a place where you've grown enough where you can actually participate in what someone else is doing. The way you prepare is by actually coming up with a lesson. And here's an outline of what the lesson can look like. A lesson is being prepared to be an Inner Circle member for a great leader so that once asked, you're already ready. So have some ideas of what you would do if you had an opportunity. So when the opportunity comes, you don't have to think through it. You already have one. Number two, you want to outline why this is good for you and how you will follow the five guidelines. So those guidelines we talked about aren't just for how you evaluate others. You got to ask yourself, how can I do those things so that I can be an Inner Circle for someone else? Three, grade yourself on clarity and content of your lesson. So after you put this lesson together, you got to ask yourself, does it make sense? And what you'll discover from there is that this law of the Inner Circle is one thing that really helps grow you and grow those around you, because now you're not doing it alone, but you're doing it with the team. That's Law 11, the Law of the Inner Circle. And the last law I want to look at tonight is the Law of Empowerment. It's Law 12, the Law of Empowerment. The Law of Empowerment only secures leaders' powers to others. Again, the Law of Empowerment is only secure leaders give power to others. The idea is that if you are really confident in your leadership, you are not afraid to share what you have with someone else. I know it's often been said that you want to hold on to what you have. You don't want to share your ideas. But, you know, good leaders aren't afraid of that. Good leaders, good speakers, those who dwell at what you do, you aren't afraid that somebody's going to take your idea, because if you came up with one, you'll come up with another one. Matter of fact, by the time they take your idea, you're already on to the next thing. You empower people. You actually give it to them. We have this principle in our church where we want to launch you before you leave us. In other words, we don't want you to get to a place where you're so frustrated that you aren't growing, or frustrated you can't use your skill or gift, that you want to leave. We want to give it all to you and push you out of the door. We want you to go somewhere else. But what we're saying is we want to give you power to do to others what we did for you. And that's the idea of the law of empowerment. But you want to get people in place where they feel valuable enough to be used. The three main barriers to empowerment. This, again, is on your worksheet. The three barriers to empowerment. The first one is desire for job security. The second is resistance to change. And the third is lack of self-worth. I'll go through those one more time, and then we'll just discuss them quickly. One of the first barriers to empowering others is your desire for job security. The second is your resistance to change. And the third is your lack of self-worth. Here it is real quick. The desire for job security is simply you don't want to give them any power. You don't want to share with them your ideas because you think that they're going to take your job. Listen, you are a leader. And because you are a leader, by definition, you influence people. So at best, they're only imitating or emulating what you've already given. You should always be at a place where you're secure in your job because you help others. That is the job. The job is helping others. It's not just to grow the business or grow an organization. The job is to add value and maximize other people's potential. If they get your position because you helped them get there, you've got to trust and believe that your leadership influence that was so good for them is going to be just as good for you. The second is resistance to change. Empowering them actually means that things are going to shift. Maxwell talks about it a lot. He says one of the things that's definitely going to happen if you grow as a leader or your organization grows is you're going to have some problems. Change causes problems because movement causes friction. There's no such thing as movement without friction. And so because that's true, you get to know that empowering them is going to cause some changes and just be able to go with the change. I think there's a pastor, Lance Watson, pastor in Richmond, Virginia. He says once that the bend in the road is not the end in the road unless you miss the turn. In other words, you can be riding a straight street, but if the street turns and you don't turn, then it's destructive for you. If you are able to make the adjustment or somehow leverage yourself where you're able to shift or move or turn with it, then things are going to be okay. The third thing is make sure that you get over that barrier that's called lack of self-worth. So never think that because you gave away something that it changed your value. It was your idea initially. It was your vision initially. And so value comes not with your ability to execute it, but because you were the one who conceived it. And knowing that conception coming from you keeps you empowered. Here's how you live out the law of empowerment. You live out the law of empowerment by finding strong leaders to empower. It's almost the idea of having a legacy. You don't want to take everything you have and all you know and what you learned and what you've invested time and energy in building your business or organization or ministry and then leave it with someone who won't pick it up. If you're going to empower somebody who's already shown you that they have some strengths. Number two, the main ingredient for empowering is belief. Again, we talked about it in Law 10, the idea of connection. You have to believe in other people. Don't just believe in your own skill and energy. Believe in them, and believing in them will allow you to empower them. In the law of empowerment, you have to learn it, live it, and lead it. You have to understand it for yourself. You have to actually live it out, walk it out, and then you lead it by helping others move with the strength you've given them. In the law of empowerment, again, you learn it, you live it, and you lead it. If you believe you have the right person to empower, believe in that person too. What belief does is belief will allow you to lift up, give freely, and support. It's that last fill in the blank. That belief will allow you to lift up. It'll give freely and support. You want to be able to get to a place where you give everything you have. Don't quote me on this, but I believe it's Tony Evans. Tony Evans, I believe, writes a book. And it's not him. Someone writes a book, and the title of the book is Learning How to Die Empty. And the idea is you do not want to leave this earth with information and resources. Before you leave, you want to have poured it all out so that after you're gone, somebody else has it. I probably suggest the same thing with your business or your organization or wherever you are. Not that you have to die, but you don't want to leave that organization or leave that business or transition to another ministry with valuable nuggets. Empower somebody else and watch your legacy grow. Allow your business to be better. Allow your ministry to produce more. It's 9 o'clock right on the dot. And these are our laws for tonight. We have Law 10, Law 11, and Law 12. And we always try to close out right at 9 o'clock. But with the time we have left, I am going to stop the recording. Right after I stop the recording, I want to just open up the line I'm actually just going to unmute it all together and ask a few people just to kind of share some nuggets, some things that you learned out of all the laws, from Law 1 through 12, if there's anything that's really stuck out or jumped out or really resonated with you, if you don't mind just sharing that so that some of the other callers, some of the other listeners, some of the others that are on the mastermind can hear how it's been changing your life.